Welcome to the Department of Homeland Security, the officially unofficial podcast for the boys on Amazon Prime. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 3, Episode 6, Herogasm. Aaron, what'd you think of this episode?
I understand that Herogasm is a comic book concept that people have been looking forward to for a while. Unfortunately, I feel like the same goes when we talk about some of the stuff on like Westworld. Like Westworld, the state of Westworld is so fucked up that sometimes when Westworld wants to show like a real din of inequity and a real scut, it's like kind of like
you.
It's kind of like, this seems way tamer than just a baseline fucked upness of this universe. I feel the same way with Boys because. Right? You know, like did a bunch of 13-year-old boys come up with the things going? There's a couple things I thought were funny, yeah. But like when I hear a 70-year-old tradition of just debauched depravity from this group of people,
yes,
I was really expecting to see some crazy shit. But apparently, you can't show an erect penis on any kind of television in America. So that limits to what you can do. You can show a 10-meter long, flaccid, uncut cock.
Prehensile.
You can't show, you can show ass. You can show titties. You can show all that kind of, but you cannot show a vaginal cleft or an erect penis. So, like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
You can show the grundle and the taint. You can show it all.
You could. The fleshy fun bridge. Yes. All those things.
I felt exactly the same. It's crazy that I came away from Herogasm with a superhero orgy feeling underwhelmed with the depravity that I saw. It just didn't seem as inventive. And I think they ate a little bit of their own lunch in the very first episode of this season with Termite.
True.
That was more fucked up, in my opinion, than anything I saw at Herogasm.
Yes.
So,
that's the way it goes sometimes, you know?
Sure. And I did like the fight. I will say between, you know, the trio versus Homelander, Soldier Boy, Butcher, and Huey, that was pretty good. I enjoyed it. I think it's right for him to, you know, get the hell out of there, lick his wounds a little bit, and then we'll see where it goes from there. But I mean, overall, look, it wasn't a bad episode. I definitely enjoyed my time watching it. I was expecting more from Herogasm.
When you see the title Herogasm, you kind of like get the bag of popcorn and you're like, what is this show going to have a take on Herogasm?
Yeah.
And I felt I name checked Westworld. There was an episode where we went to some kind of like, you know, it's like the off the map part of Westworld and it's a whole city given to depravity. And it's like you get there and it's just like good looking people fucking naked in masks, like eyes wide
I've
shut.
Seen
like,
Malcolm I saw this McDowell 20 years ago. Do this.
Yes.
Almost mainstream film. Yeah. It's.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So, like, it. But, yeah, I'm with you. Everything other than my disappointment in Herogasm, although the shooting ropes.
The stuff they do to MM is great.
If his mouth were wide open, it would have approached the kind of like just shock and awe I was expecting. Because like what they put MM through, was the best part of Herogasm in my opinion. Between the return of the love sausage, and the guy shooting ropes and lick it up, you yummy brown bear. wow. Otherwise, this is it's one of those things where it's like. Do you think Homelander makes it out this season? Because how?
Right? I mean, he needs to catch Butcher with his pants down. Not literally, but...
He missed a shot of Herogasm. You
know? Right? No, but he needs to catch him without the V-juice, right? The same for Huey. If he can take on Soldier Boy alone, I think he might win that battle.
I do too.
If he has to contend with the trio, or even more, honestly, I don't know that he wins that battle. So... I think he's got to play it a little smarter. He can't just run smack face into this thing and think I'm going to hero my way out of this. I'm going to brute force it.
I just wonder thematically, is it because they're like just pushing Homelander into ever more extreme positions in, you know, thought and action. And I wonder because like, can he survive from that angle?
Gotcha.
Because he went full on Gollum in this episode where he's like having a mental break and the pressure he's under now that he feels like for the first time maybe in his life physically vulnerable to a threat.
Mm-hmm.
And Starlight throws it. Well, I guess Annie Jupiter throws it all out there, hangs it all out on the line at the end of this episode in a way to deliberately isolate and humiliate him. Not Jupiter, Annie January. I was getting my Watchmen and my The Boys confused.
Right.
Yeah. It's either way the. Like, I don't know what the universe looks like without him, but on the other hand, like, this needs to happen. Maybe they put it off till next season, but, like, if they put it off to next season, it feels like it will be something to have to resolve early on, which might feel unsatisfying. Or they find, like, a new way to reset the Homelander clock, a new way to keep him cowed and in his place. I don't know. It's... I'm really curious about that.
Yeah, it's interesting because we talked last episode about the nature of parody, right? And Poe's mm-hmm. law and right. how this show is rubbing up against that. It embodies it in a lot of ways. It'll be interesting to see what this show has to say with Annie's attempts here. Like, is a public ready to hear that Homelander is evil and turn on him? Is that going to simply make them embrace him tighter? The certain people who have latched onto his message already, right? Do reprehensible acts necessarily alienate people? I think that's a super fascinating question. It's something that the show is setting up, right? It's encouraging us to think in those terms. And boy, the outcome of that is going to be either terrifying or reaffirming, but you know, maybe sort of pointlessly so. Like, until you understand that that's what's actually happening in our real world, saying it on television and hoping for the best is not necessarily going to get my blood pumping. But
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see. But it's interesting to me too that like all of Homelander's actions are what is we're coming back to bite him here, right? It's like you mm-hmm. don't have this team up that could threaten him physically without all of the shit that he's done before and has made enemies, right?
If he had the Seven behind him?
Sure. If he even had his own cadre of superheroes protecting him.
Right.
But he's out on a limb saying, I don't need anybody. I don't need anything except myself. And mm-hmm. that, now he's reaping the consequences of that philosophy.
Yeah. And it's what seems to be, because I mean, that's the whole thing. He's just not thinking through his actions. But what seems especially insane is that this isn't like in a world where there's naturally occurring things or he didn't come from a planet. He thinks he's some singular, like he comes from a system that created him mm-hmm. and could certainly undo him if they just need a bigger soup. Like his confidence in his own abilities is entirely unwarranted, but you can see we keep on getting layers back. Like I thought it was really instructive. Some of the things he said to himself into the mirror, mm-hmm. About some of the things that were done to him as a child and the abuse he went through and that he's got this, like I said, this Gollum figure that's taking care of him that has been strong when he's felt human and weak. And, but unfortunately none of this comes from within. All this came from a test tube. So all they got to do is inject someone with twice as much V, or it seems like Butcher even might be able to do him in alone if it comes down to that.
Exactly. Like the thing he should be most scared of in that fight is that Butcher now has superpowers, and not because Butcher hates him and has superpowers, but because anybody could be a Butcher. Right. And therefore anybody could be a Homelander. That's the thing that should scare him.
And he creates butchers by the bushelful almost on a daily basis just by being him. So
psychological butchers, certainly.
Yep. People with a motive to get to bring him down.
The one other thing that I really loved about Herogasm is the way that they tied, and I don't know if this is a comic book thing, but the way they tied Huey's superpower into Herogasm so that he not only shows up at Herogasm, but he is appropriately dressed. The way he teleports out of his clothes into Herogasm, it was amazing to me.
It's the one place on world you can teleport naked into and people look at you and just be like, oh,
exactly. You
know? And there was even a couple, like I saw that people notice his arrival, and that's exactly the kind of like, oh yeah, well, teleporting naked guys here. Yeah. Right. That'd be interesting. Yeah.
That was so good. But yeah, maybe we should get into the recap proper.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move. We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new Commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. We start off with Ashley Deep and Homelander editing a bunch of celebrities into a video where they sing Imagine. They freak out when they see that Soldier Boy is alive because somehow, I don't know how, like, look, I've edited some video in my time. I don't know how the Deep does it, but he takes some footage that just does not belong anywhere in this propaganda video with the Soldier Boy stuff. I don't know how that got in there. Yeah,
what are you talking about?
So we're seeing like this propaganda. Imagine, all the people, that stuff. And then this footage of the Deep editing the video.
No. He wasn't editing that video. He was just trying to pull up. He was in Vought's crime detection center trying to pull up CCTV footage from the Vought world or whatever. It's a sloppy cut, but we just jump in with him already berating him for nothing that we've seen.
Yeah. Okay. I thought he had included the footage in that. And I'm like, what?
Are you aware that this is a real life parody of something that actually happened? At the very beginning of the pandemic, all these celebrities sang Imagine into their fucking cell phones and released it as like,
I don't remember that. No,
a measure to make the little people feel better. That's why I'm like, this is the stuff that I don't like about the show when they take a real life trend and they just do it unvarnished. It's the exact same thing we saw 2 years ago, only with superheroes and, And in the same way that they did the Kendall Jenner Diet Coke or Diet Pepsi commercial and the A-Trains shit, like, mm-hmm. but I don't know, like, because when the Twitter seemed to go crazy over the A-Train parody. So, like, maybe people like this, but I find it very stilted. Like, I much prefer the boys to take current and reimagine them in a superhero universe and come up with, like, predictive things. But, like, mm-hmm. I don't know, this stuff... It's crazy. How did they get all these celebrities to do this too?
Money helps.
Because yeah. I noticed that they're like people who are maybe geek adjacent. Sure. Like you Patton had the Patton Oswalt and Josh Gad and Giga Chad Nanjiani,
mm-hmm.
Who has taken V, I think, in real life.
Must have. I mean,
when you see the guy like that, there's little Barry Bonds here. Like he might have taken a little one too many sight. Like he changed the shape of a skull. The man changed the shape of a skull. I think.
Okay. Who knows? Who knows? Get that much muscle. He starts squeezing your skull in. It changes it.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. So they freak out. They see Soldier Boy's alive. Ashley wants to make a statement, but Homelander realizes, look, Soldier Boy could actually take my place here. So I'm going to find him and I'm going to kill him. And nobody's going to know about this stuff. And then Homelander asks Black Noir about Soldier Boy, gets no response, you know, takes that as a nod of support or something. And then Black Noir pulls mm-hmm. his tracker out and leaves Vought.
I really like how everything that happens to Homelander, he cannot abstract anything. Everything is happening to him because of him. And like, he has this like mini meltdown where he's like, why is this happening to me? This is so fucking unfair. It's just like a real insight into this type of person. This like deep narcissism and insecurity, this wounded narcissist. It's pretty, I like it, and it's also terrifying.
Sure. Like I said, the Deep is being berated for his terrible editing skills. Are they going to use that later, or is this just, you know, piling on to the Deep because that's what the show does? Is this going to come back to bite them somehow?
The Deep try. Oh, I mean, Vought being crippled, their crime fighting, I'm sure, will be something.
Like the Deep's terrible editing. Like maybe they have him edit something and a piece of footage slips in that shouldn't, or. He makes him say something accidentally that's taken the wrong way.
I don't know, because you're fixated on his editing thing. I don't think the Deep edited this fucking video. I think that this was like a Vought. This is an Ashley thing. And then it cuts to an unrelated shot of the Deep trying to fumble with this crime scene stuff that he fired everybody from the crime division.
Yeah, no, I get that. But then
if you're
later,
asking me if the latter thing is going to be a problem, then I imagine. But he's also hard at work at pinning it. Like him and Ashley are trying to like jockey for Homelander's approval and support, right?
Totally. Yeah.
Because he throws Ashley over the under the bus, and she like, you know, is on a vicious attack dog mode for him on the Fox and Friends analog. I don't know. It feels like they're systematically dismembering everything about Vought that makes it a positive institution. Like it's a terrible one. Don't get me wrong. But they also did some limited good and you know, being able to crack down on crime and whatnot. And like that little good is being completely eroded by people of bad faith and limited intellect.
Yeah. And maybe the best good they did was keeping Homelander under their thumb a bit. Who knows what he's going to do off the leash.
I wonder if they're trying to make a statement about, you know, because there's like it's a constant, you know, debate about whether you should reform something or whether something needs to be destroyed and then rebuilt from scratch. And I wonder if Vought is kind of like this show's idea of America in its entirety, and that, yeah, it does some good things, it does some bad things, but there's the bad kind of outweighs the good and it's impossible to reform. I don't know if that's how I feel, but I wonder what the show, because it seems like maybe they're going to have something to say about that.
Yeah, it's possible. We'll see. Butcher tries to talk Soldier Boy into joining their team. He's not very receptive until Huey points out that he's woefully out of date technologically and investigatorially. Sure, that's a word. In exchange for helping him find the rest of his team, Soldier Boy agrees to help with Homelander because he's now on a mission to kill them all.
Do you think this chop sake oriental sauce was this show showing its age, its coronavirus age? Because that feels like a Rick and Morty Szechuan joke that's 3 years too late.
Yeah, yeah. That's exactly what I thought. I was like, oh, that's a Rick and Morty thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure. I'm not sure. It could also be an MSG thing, right? How, like, we went crazy about MSG here and just totally basically pulled it off every shelf.
Right.
With maybe dubious evidence. So, I don't know. They're doing something with that.
I thought it's because, like, obviously this is a McDonald's analog, you know, with the big red box of fries and the super-sized drink. And, you know, it's like, I'm sure the show's been under development for a long time, and like everything else got shut down and limited and postponed because of COVID. It felt like that's one of those jokes that needs to be a little bit more ripped from the headlines. And I'm kind of surprised they left it in there, but whatever.
Yeah. I find it funny that Huey can't even lift Soldier Boy's shield without superpowers.
Well, I'm wondering, are they going for like a cap, like a Mighty Thor? That, like, is this thing made out of depleted uranium or some shit that's just like super fucking dense and heavy, and a mortal can't pick it up? Because Huey's kind of a weenie, but he's still like a average fitness man. I think he should be able to pick that up if it's like made out of, I don't know, steel or something.
Right. No, I did take it like it's made out of some material that is extremely heavy because of the fights he gets in, right? Like, he's going to be, you know, blocking tank rounds or heavy munitions or fighting other superheroes who could punch through a piece of steel. Like, yeah, it might be something
heavier. I guess this is also like at least roughly like picking up a manhole cover, and those things are no fucking joke.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just like hard to grab it without having to handle. But,
yeah, it's thick.
I mean, I wasn't going for literally like a Mjolnir, like only the worthy can pick it up.
Okay.
It's more of like, it's just like weighs 1,000 pounds, you know?
Yeah.
The other thing that's interesting about that these soups have been kind of like, there was no golden age of soups where they were good.
No.
Because Soldier Boy reveals himself to be snorting benzos and has been doing it since World War II, that he founded Herogasm in the 50s. Like, this, there was never a golden age where these guys were all right and were going to be normal people, like from the jump. And you wonder, like, were they selected for this and like aggression and kind of like, or did V make them? And I feel like there's a little bit of that discussion happening throughout the episode, because Frenchie and Kimiko are like the other two extremes of people with very similar pasts, and one superpowered, one's not. But who's the monster?
Mm-hmm.
Are any of them monsters? And in Frenchie's case, he can't blame it on V. So I thought there's this is like dispelling the notion there was ever good old days, and the heroes have kind of always been like that was interesting, and they established it very well this episode.
Yeah. I mean, if you're taking Butcher to be gospel here, this power is, you know, going to corrupt everybody, right? It turns you into a right cunt, as he says.
Yeah.
Which is just the Butcher way of saying absolute power corrupts absolutely, right?
Right.
So then we go to Kimiko, who's recovering in the hospital while trying to figure out what to text Frenchie, because she hasn't seen him in a while. She's attacked and taken by Nina's goon.
Very sad. Just as we predicted, she thinks that she did something wrong, that she scared Frenchie off with the kiss. She's trying to lure him back with Singing in the Rain marathon, which would have worked on me. And then she gets kidnapped. Sucking down Maeve Pops like there's no tomorrow, though.
Mm-hmm.
Taking full advantage of the hospital food situation.
My only question coming out of this scene is, why did the photo go to jail? It's written on the popsicle stick. It's a joke, you know.
Oh.
You eat the popsicle and the answer's embedded inside of it.
Because he got framed. The stick that she picks her lock with was that same stick that had the joke. Yeah.
Okay, I missed that.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you met, because I had that written in my notes and I completely forgot to bring it up. But yeah. Yeah, because he got framed.
Nice. All right, Starlight and Mother's Milk figure that Soldier Boy is going after the rest of his old team. So Mother's Milk, he's sick of taking the high road always, and he wants to kill Butcher and Huey at this point. Starlight, you know, thinks that's not a good idea, but she gets called away by Ashley to go do some PR stuff.
I thought it was border, like, I think the writers are hoping we don't ask questions like, why are they both going for the TNT twins? Maybe it's that they're both the ones that are in the obvious hiding spots. But I thought that Vought would know where all the supers are at all time, even ones trying to remain hidden. And yeah, like, it just seemed convenient that they're going to start with the TNT twins that are having herogasm. And like I said, they're just hoping we don't hear the sound of the typewriters clicking, clacking in the background. I did a little bit. Not enough to derail, but
yeah,
plot convenience here.
Yeah, I'll tolerate it. The thing I really love about this scene is MM's speech. You know, he's sick of taking the fucking high road, but like, man, it's tough, right? Because Starlight, it has been down this road already. You know, she's the one who's trying to have to do things the right way. She's always being told to do things the right way. And I feel like by the end of this episode, she threatens to come over to MM's side, where she is sick of taking the high road and, you know, fighting these soups not on their own terms. But then she uses the tools at her disposal to play a little dirty, but not really, right? So yeah. she's constantly teetering on this line that I think Huey is crossing, but like, she's right up there on the edge of that, ready to fall over.
I think that's the other thing this episode is doing, is clearly delineating between the good guys and the bad guys and the, you know, morally gray, because Starlight, mm-hmm, and Mother's Milk both make a conscious choice to do the right thing in this episode when they could have otherwise contributed to the problem.
Yeah.
And like I said, they both are kind of complaining about it. They both come kind of close, but there are lines that they still realize cannot be crossed in a way that like Butcher and Huey don't. And like, Frenchie's an interesting case because he's almost like a completely out of the action. But like, of the boys, only like MM and Starlight are holding any kind of moral decency or any kind of lines at all at this point.
MM like wants to go over the line. He's stopped by Butcher, right? He's just got a death wish at this point. Like, I'm going to either win a hand-to-hand fight with Homelander, or sorry, Soldier Boy, or I'm going to die trying, you know?
Well, I mean, also, like, when he takes that pistol, he says, this ain't for Homelander. Means to kill Butcher or Huey if they're not souped up to stop him, because they've crossed the line.
Yeah, crazy. A-Train wants Ashley to bring charges against Blue Hawk for paralyzing his brother. She refuses. He says, oh, look, I want justice. And then she tells him a thing or two about justice, which is interesting, right? Because this is a role reversal here. All of a sudden you care because it happened to you. Go fuck yourself is what Ashley tells him, because he's hurt a lot of people using his powers. This is usually the feeling that black people have about white people, right? Like, oh, now you're getting on board with this after something bad has happened to your white kids. Yeah, great. Where were you for the last several hundred years, right? And you can kind of feel that, but it's turned around, it's inverted in this scene, and it feels weird in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But maybe it will sink in a little bit with some people, right? Like that's the advantage of doing things this sort of bizarro world way.
Yeah, and it feels like the Ashley, there's like this moment of triumph before like also the horror of what she's doing is adding up, and then like A-Train later has like a moment of like, I think, honest reflection because of this happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, we talked about this before, it's like, it's a shame that something has to happen to you before you realize how bad it sucks, but it does seem like an almost universal human condition. That like, you have to have, like, you can empathize all you, but it takes so much. It takes 100 hours of empathy to get like 5 minutes of personal experience with something. And the other thing is like, where are they going with Ashley pulling clumps of her hair out? This is like the third time it's happened.
Going to be bald like, by the end of the series.
I wonder. Is she going to look like Stormfront?
Yeah. Know? Yeah, totally. Like,
early season one Stormfront, you know, like, what is this going to cost her?
I love the Vought Images stock photo service that they're using at the beginning of this scene.
The the proud black man's journey through the roots of his roots.
God,
A-Train to Africa. My God, this looks so. I wonder if they're going to keep going someplace with this, because man, it just looks worse and worse the more you see of it. And I think even A-Train is starting to become aware of the cringe now that he's getting firsthand experience of what's actually going on. You know.
Yeah, who knows how long they can keep that going? I'm not sure the seven are even going to be a thing at the end of this season.
Yeah.
The Deep tell and his wife tell Homelander that Black Noir is gone. They know where Soldier Boy is headed next, to the TNT twins. And Homelander says, okay, go there and call me if you find Soldier Boy. The Deep here has a look at the end of this scene that says he's getting very tired of his wife always jumping in and making it happen when he can't.
I wonder where that's going to.
I don't know.
Because the thing is like, the Deep is an idiot, and his wife is helping him in ways that he probably couldn't help himself. But I don't know. It feels like the Deep has somewhat suffered as a character. I don't know how he goes into comics, but like, he is the comic relief, and I didn't feel like he was any more or less an idiot than any of the other seven in the early goings, you know. But like, since he got like disgraced from his sexual assault of Starlight, he's just been one embarrassing thing after the other. But it seems like the show is leaning into that he's now getting a little bit of delusions of grandeur. He's having a little bit of success with the help of his wife, but he's now just sees it as like, oh, this is just me. It's just all me, baby.
Yeah, when he's being used as an opportunistic thing here by Homelander. It's not that he's giving you respect, man.
And to the Deep's point, she didn't eat the fucking her best friend alive.
Sure.
The Deep did. The Deep's not putting himself on his ass on the line, somewhat literally, at the hero gasm. You know, he is doing that, not mm-hmm. his wife. So like, he's taking her advice, and she seems to be more politically savvy than him, but also he sacrificed a lot.
Yeah. So Homelander gives himself a pep talk in the mirror, worrying that he's not up to the task of running Vought and that no one will love him. But his self-reflection here says he needs to cut the human part of himself out of the equation. And then we get a lot of backstory here, or not a ton, but we get insight into it. Mm-hmm. He talks about the bad room that they had at Vought.
Yeah.
That they used to be put in as kids, and this split personality he has is how he would cope with it.
Yeah. This is like a person's inner critic charged up with V. Like, the way he is just ruthless with himself. And man, again, Anthony Starr.
Yeah.
When he's doing the, you know, like, there's a part of you still human, dirty, shriveled, anemic part that yearns for the approval and love of mommy, daddy, and oh, boo, hoo, hoo. He's so fucking cutting and vicious with himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he thinks he's at this fallacy of like, you can just only cut the weak parts off you, then you'll be clean and pure like marble.
And this reflection we see in the mirror is the guy that we see most of the time with Homelander, right? You only get rare glimpses into the other guy, who's you know, it's strange that we're seeing the mirror image of a character that we feel like we know most of the time.
It reminds me a lot of like Mr. Robot, you know, like, this is the story of a man who went through a lot of abuse as a young person, and it mm-hmm. left permanent mental and probably emotional scars on him. And this is his coping mechanism. This is how he survived it. So it's like one of those things where it's like, I don't think I can ever feel sorry for Homelander.
Right.
But like, I do feel sorry for the kid that was put in that position that became Homelander.
Sure.
Because it seems like 99 out of 100 people you put through that process and something fucked up is going to happen with them.
Mm-hmm. We're watching Afghanistan propaganda made by Soldier Boy in the 70s, I assume. He gets riled up about what's happening to the country he fought for and the price he's paid for achieving nothing. And Huey asks him what happened to Manhattan. He claims he blacked out for about 10 minutes. He doesn't even know. And he didn't mean to hurt anybody. And then Butcher returns to their hotel room here and says, we're off to Vermont. So you guys both need to power up with V24. Or so we need to power up with V24. And they do.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned this is 70s. This is actually a parody of Rambo 3.
okay.
Down to the Rambo 3 was dedicated to the brave Mujahideen warriors.
Really?
Who opposed the Soviets at our convenience in the 80s and later. Like I said, it's not a one-to-one, like a lot of people say it is, but that is, there's a lineage there that led directly to the 2001 attacks against America by Afghanistan, or people based in Afghanistan. It's another thing where it's like, it's not even really sat, it's just doing mm-hmm. it's just doing the thing, you know? I think he's even doing a, did you detect a little bit of a Sly Stallone in his delivery?
I didn't. I wasn't looking for it because I didn't recognize the Rambo 3 reference. I've never seen that movie, but yeah.
I did a little bit more of the, but then he kind of talks like this in the best of situations too. So maybe it's an overall kind of thing, but.
I did recognize a Wilhelm scream in there. That was kind of funny.
A weird Wilhelm.
Yeah, maybe a one that tapers
off.
Not
the classic. Yeah, but I don't know. You can see him. I also like that how Huey's like really worried about the radiation. Like he's got the Geiger counter and he's trying to pay attention to where he is at all times.
You can tell his mood, right? You can read his mood with the Geiger counter. And also just like the stuff that he's saying, it's hilarious, right? Because like Soldier Boy doesn't know a lot about what we know about the people he's talking about, like Bill Cosby, for instance. And he mentions him,
America's dad,
but Soldier Boy also has some really backwards views on things. So he might also in the same sentence praise something really fucked up too, knowing it. And Huey's reactions to this is just like, there's a lot to unpack there. But he can't get into it with the guy, right? Just hilarious.
Yeah. It's, I mean, but we picked up on this, the fact that he doesn't, you know, there's this commentary of, this resonates with a lot of men that like, you know, we've lost our way and we've come too feminine and we've come too in touch with our, you know, we're good Christ, we're changing diapers and we're carrying babies on our chest with a device intended for that purpose.
Wearing capes.
What's happening?
What's become of us?
Right. You're wearing capes like some kind of goddamn dandy. I wonder where they are going. With like, is this just going to be all it is? Or if they're going something else, because like, you know, this inverted Captain America, this frozen caveman, essentially, comes out decrying the state of modern America.
I don't know.
I don't know. And the other thing is like, also like, I think maybe it's just intended as a critique because him hearkening back to the golden era when well, your team hated you enough to kill you.
Yeah.
Like, it might have worked for you, but it didn't work for anybody else on the team. And like, maybe you could think about why that is.
And did it really work for you if you were frozen and tortured? And
if it led to your, you know, being betrayed by your own government, by your own corporation, by your own teammates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll see.
But
what they
do also like this thing is like, it won't happen again unless they got cut. It seems like he has very little control over his superpower. His new anti-soup superpower.
Yeah, I mean, if he gets angry, it's like the Hulk, right? A little bit.
Or triggered. Not just angry, but like specifically triggered.
Sure, by that Russian music, yeah.
Yeah.
The Deep and his wife visit the TNT twins, and we are introduced to the superhero orgy that is called Herogasm. It's legendary.
Very tame introduction.
Yeah,
I thought it was funny on second watch. The creep that likes the butthole gazer is the one commiserating with the Deep about, man, you can't even pay a woman a compliment. Can't even rape their throat without. Yeah, it's like, come on, man. Like, but it's like, yeah, this guy's a total creep, even amongst creeps,
for sure. So it's just the tip of Herogasm. We'll get to the rest later.
Like the love sausage, it's just a tip. Yeah. There's a lot more to unpack.
Jesus. Homelander and Starlight do a talk show, the same talk show we've been on. No, it's a different host. And the other guest is Newman. Surprise, surprise. Homelander insists there's nothing for the public to worry about and insists very emphatically and walks off stage. And then Newman invites Starlight to sit down for a chat. She reveals that she knows that Starlight knows that she's a soup, the head popper, And she claims, look, I'm on your side. I just want to use your influence to make things better for women. And Starlight is fed up with being told to do shitty things in order to win. And she's not going to do it anymore. So then Newman threatens Starlight and then leaves.
Yeah, this VNN network stuff, again, is just like very broad critique of the Trump administration. I did like the way they introduced the scene of the two ladies sitting together and talking with them popping open pop cans.
Okay. You know,
because like, that's like, that's what's on your mind, right? Is she going to pop Starlight's head?
Right.
And like Starlight holding her off, but just, and the implication that she burst a very small blood vessel in her, you know, kind of gives us an idea what kind of control she has over this power.
And that it works on other soups too, right? I'm not sure we've ever seen that directly.
Yeah, because they popped that FBI director's head. They popped a bunch of that's a good.
Because we were questioning, could she do it?
It wouldn't surprise me if someone sent in feedback as like, I didn't expect, but like, it wouldn't surprise me if she has.
Right.
But like, Starlight's a pretty powerful soup too. Uh-huh. She's powerful enough to be in the seven. So she's maybe, I don't think she could defeat Homelander, but she's in that ballpark. So which makes you think that maybe it would work.
Uh-huh. And I think like this episode does a lot to, I almost want to say humanize Homelander. That's in, but not in, you know, emotional terms, in like power terms. Cause I think he does have weaknesses. He's not invincible physically, but we'll see.
But she wants her influence, her 190 million followers. She wants to, you know, to trade some, you scratch my back for I scratch your back.
And I'm with her here, right? Like, she is willing to sacrifice her personal gain and face danger in order to live up to her principles. And that is what is needed from damn near everybody on this planet. We'd be a lot better off.
Oh, 100%. I thought that Victoria was going to pop like a tooth, like a molar or something a little bit more Du Bois and painful. Like I thought she got off easy with a little blood trickle, or like maybe explode her pinky toe or something.
Okay.
You know, yep. blood, bloody nose. But it's, she made her point. She made her point.
Yeah. All right. Nina brings Frenchie, Kimiko and Cherie to a warehouse. She chains Serge naked to a post, explains how he got his various scars, and then she makes him choose whether to kill Kimiko or Cherie. Fortunately for them, Kimiko breaks free and kills Nina's goons, then frees Frenchie, but Nina gets away.
And this is where Kimiko reveals the second half of the joke as she frees herself with this popsicle stick. I liked Frenchie getting chained up Crazy 8 style against the pillar. You know, we get enough, you know, again, we get some more backstory on Frenchie, that he had a difficult upbringing. His father is abusive, made him kneel on broken glass. He's taken bullets for Nina. And yet Kimiko, do you think she's got a little, I think she's got a little bit of her powers back. I feel like when she broke that dude's thumbs, mm-hmm. that's where, like, everything else, like her biting the dude's Achilles tendon to take him down and then shivving the shit out of him with that 8-inch spike, like, but also that dude is just beating the shit out of her midsection where she had all those injuries. And I just feel like it would kill a person. She's not 100% back to herself, but enough. I think they're definitely hinting that she's back in a little bit. Did you get those vibes too?
You could be right. Yeah. I was very surprised, I guess, when she got back up after being punched 100 times in her already wounded guts.
By a big dude. He was dropping bombs on that midsection.
Yeah, this would take out UFC fighters, let alone some small girl. Yeah. Here's the other thing. This scene told me, boy, the boys has broken me. The boys has fucked me up beyond repair, because my brother is staying with us this week. I was watching this episode and he comes down and watches a scene. And he's like, when Kimiko jumps on this guy, starts stabbing him, he's like, oh my God, that's fucked up. And I was just thinking, oh, Kimiko stabbing a dude.
Yeah. Is your brother like a human centipede guy? Cause like you've been in
I've
the
been
outer
broken for a
reaches.
Long time.
Yeah. I was going to say the boys did break. They might've finished a job, but you've been working on yourself for a while.
Fair.
I wasn't sure if he was one of those horror hounds because
no, I don't think so.
Yeah, shit, you see this on like the fucking season, the season premiere of Oz. Like, this is pretty getting old prison shanking. Come on, come on, man.
Yeah, the human centipede is what I use to get myself through the bad room. All right, MM and Starlight are driving. She asks about MM's tick with his thumb, and he tells her, or his index finger, whatever. He tells her the story about how his grandpa was killed by Soldier Boy, which I thought was a car accident. Turns out it is, but Soldier Boy threw a car into their house, and it killed his grandfather. Which
that's how it was written up, but it sounds like that's how it got written up in the VOT report. It's like, oh, that's a car accident. What are you going to do?
Of course. And so ever since then, and during that time, he had this thing where they said they needed to check the burners. And I think he's talking about stove burners here. Three times a night, or Soldier Boy would come back, kill his family. It's like a Krampus thing. And he says, look, I got to end this one way or another. Got to get him out of my head.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I'm not a psychologist. I don't know. I've never heard of like OCD being brought on by a trauma like this, but it kind of makes sense that like my careless thought and action led to someone I care about being killed by this person. So like, if I have any other thoughtless or careless actions, or if I stop thinking, or if I stop being hypervigilant, that these things will happen to me again. But I thought it's pretty, pretty profound.
Yeah. It's like a self-induced OCD, right? Like he could stop potentially, but maybe he's too deep in now and yeah, it got away from him.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was interesting. It's cool. It's interesting backstory for him.
Yeah. I really wanted to know ever since he's had this vendetta against, Soldier Boy, what the deal was. And now we do. Speaking of knowing things, we know a little too much in this next scene, man. MM and Starlight tell us what Herogasm is really all about. We saw a little bit of it earlier. Now we get the full story. MM's clothes get absolutely ruined during his time at Herogasm. Butcher's team is out back, and Huey's going to teleport in to find the twins. I forgot this starts off by being reintroduced to Love Sausage, reunited with Love Sausage. And it feels so good, at least for me, maybe not for him.
It's just so absurd. It is. So absurd.
Yeah.
This giant, poorly animated and textured cock.
It's like, what is it? What is it good for? Right.
Opening doors, I guess.
You know what?
I bet Termite gets a little bit of, because I was just thinking that like, oh, what?
Termite could get a little bigger, right? Or does he only have two sizes?
Yes, maybe. Oh, I don't know. Maybe he can do the full like German airport thing that the Ant-Man does in Captain America 3 to get super size. I don't know.
Yeah,
because I guess he could. You could use. It seems like he was getting some action in one part of the episode, but I'm like, man, it's just like forever just the tip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That ain't satisfying.
Constantly a tease, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just dipping your toe in the water all the time.
Unless he can find like Stretch Girl or something, right? Or
plus if he's using the head of his dong to like open doors and shit, like that's gotta be like mad desensitized and calloused and whatnot.
I bet the only place the Love Sausage can get off is Herogasm. I think you gotta bring a certain type of superhero together with him.
Takes a team to bring him off. Yeah,
sure.
You gotta work in shifts.
Takes a village. Yeah,
like have different sectors of the sausage you're working with. You gotta divide. Yeah.
Just thinking the right combination of superpowers might get it done. Right. Like who's the guy from Fantastic Four that can stretch?
Yeah, Mr. Fantastic.
Right. You could probably put the whole thing in him.
True. True. And then that's the thing. It's like if you could show an erect male penis, they could have had something there. Like who doesn't want to see a 30-foot long rock hard donger with like 13 different soups going to town on it, like some kind of crazy. But like they can't do that.
Like it's those party hoagies that you can order, right?
Yeah.
That take up a whole table, the yard long. Yeah.
Yeah. You need sandwich artists. That's the only ones with the training to deal with with the love sausage.
Yeah. I don't know. I was underwhelmed, let's say, by the inventiveness, the creativity. I saw a guy with his crotch on fire. That wasn't crazy to me, but.
Yeah, they had like a Wonder Woman type tying up some dude with the lasso of truth. Sure. That's pretty kinky. They had a mentalist like pleasuring four women at once. There's also this implication that a lot of these women are sex workers that are there.
Right.
Some kind of nebulous version of willing, and that it's they're not enjoying it because they show this guy like manifest an 18-inch ice donger and thrust it into some woman. Didn't seem like she's enjoying it. Mm-hmm. So just like this theme of these supers using people continues to be the reinforced. Oh, and then the stuff like I said, the thing that's funny is like the 13-year-old boy stuff that actually works, which is like, you know, here's Termite manifesting himself outside of a woman, and he's covered head to toe with pussy juice, and he bumps into and covers his jacket, and that he thinks that's bad. And then this dude's throwing ropes and schlacks him, flocks him like a Christmas tree.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like when the kids get slimed on, you can't do that on television or whatever it is, right? Except it's white. Yeah.
And this throwing ropes, there's like this is like classic, I think, late 80s, early 90s porn star that I'm not a huge fan. I'm not really familiar with the name, Nick Manning. And his catchphrase was dropping loads.
Okay.
I don't know why you would ever like become known for a porno catchphrase. It seems like that's something that would be not something that you want to inject into every scene. But yeah, I don't know why. I don't know why they're paying homage to Mr. Manning here, but that's what they're doing.
I mean, does he do... So this is probably the era of the porn with a story, right? Like the maybe? Attempts at, like, you know, highbrow porn. So maybe he would have an opportunity when he comes in, you know, as the pizza delivery guy with his dick through the hole in the pizza box or whatever, to say, like, why don't you try a slice and I'll drop a load? Or... Because modern day porno, I feel like you don't get the opportunity.
He yells, dropping loads, and then he does it. He says it, then he does it.
He says it
while he's it. He announces it as he's arriving.
That's not interesting to me. The loads are dropping.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. And okay. and the boys are paying because you don't have to have this guy say throwing ropes as he blows a cannon all over mother. So they're playing the you know deliberate homage the Nick Manning.
Wow,
I don't know. Maybe maybe they're big fans of Manning's work.
There's a lot going on here. Starlight, when she walks in, I thought it was funny that they have one of her dildos kind of like floating around the air and penetrating somebody. Yeah,
being levitated. Yeah,
right near her. She walks in to try to convince Blue Hawk to help with Homelander, but he's not interested. And she finds the Deep fucking an octopus, and she takes a blackmail photo.
Of course,
which that's probably useful in the future.
Might be.
On her social media account, perhaps. He says, look, it was Homelander's idea to come here, trying to get himself off the hook. Huey finds the TNT twins arguing and then runs into A-Train. And this is pretty interesting, I thought. He decides, right now, I'm going to get an apology from you about Robin. And A-Train doesn't know he has superpowers, right?
Right.
And Huey is prepared to confront him with that realization if he needs to. But A-Train just obliges him. He's like... pretty genuine here with an apology, which pisses Huey off, right?
Yeah, sometimes getting what you want is a pisser. But I like how they played like A-Train starts with like kind of like, you know, begrudging and kind of like pissed off about it. But as he talks about the care, you know, the way that people get hurt when, you know, the little people that don't matter. And his brother and being paralyzed, like there is some genuine, he got there. I think he, again, because of lived experience, but he's got there where he feels real bad. Like that's fucked up, man. I exploded your girlfriend just running down the street, you know?
And he's probably thinking of that terrible apology that Blue Hawk gave to the community. Like, that was disingenuous. And yeah, as he gets into this, he realizes I feel this. And I think like the thing about, you know, Huey wanting to go at him here and punching him because he gets an apology is like Huey used to want an apology. Now what Huey wants is revenge.
He wants to be getting even. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, it's disarming, and to the point where like he doesn't really know how to respond other than to double down on the thing he's got, right? Which is revenge.
Yeah. And we know something that Huey doesn't, which is these heroes hurt themselves as often as they hurt each other and others. Like, you know, like, as I think he was in love with Popclaw, right? He didn't.
Yeah, I think so.
So like, that was kind of one of the points, is that they're out of control, that the difference between, you know, masochism and sadism are kind of like blurred, because their lifestyle hurts each other and themselves as much as it does anybody outside. Not that it makes it okay.
Right.
I did like, before we move on, I want to talk about, like, we really glossed over like Herogasm, not great, but I thought the deep with the octopus, and as he turns around and it's got one tentacle giving him the business in the back, like, that's pretty fucked up. And the octopus just making a slur. And I'm like, also, if you know anything about octopus, it's going down on him with a fucking beak.
I know.
Like a big ass parrot beak. And oh, Jesus. It's like fucking a guillotine. I don't care what's on the other side of that thing. It's a menace. It's dangerous.
Yeah.
The other thing is, when Huey was there looking through binoculars at Herogasm, I love the shot of the one lady who's like up against the glass and her ass is flattening up against the glass wall as she's getting filled from the inside. It's like, just like, I don't know, something about that hand being constantly pressed in a rhythm.
Did you see when Starlight finds the deep, you can see his ass pressed against the other side of the aquarium through the aquarium?
I didn't. That's hilarious.
It was pretty good.
Lots of pressed hams in this episode.
A ton. So Starlight intervenes in A-Train and Huey's fight, and Huey says, look, Soldier Boy's here. Starlight says, look, Homelander's about to be here. And then Soldier Boy walks in, and Huey teleports both himself and Starlight back to their car. And he tells Starlight, I'm fed up with being the weak one in this relationship. And they have a little confrontation there, which the metaphor here, right? Like Huey burying his body and soul at the same time. They're both naked after he teleports them. There's, you know, the veils are off what they're feeling.
Yeah. I think that Starlight's onto something here, that like Huey is just a fucked up, broken, insecure, like he's got big Homelander energy, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, this need for control of everything in his life, the need to like keep everything safe and pure. It's a fucked up instinct. And, you know, it's another instance of like him kind of not being truthful with her. Like, there's layers to it. And this last one, it's like, I've been fundamentally dishonest with you since the beginning of our relationship, because if I told you the truth, you'd leave me. It's not good. It's not a good look, man.
Agreed. And then MM confronts Soldier Boy at Herogasm with a smoke grenade. I don't know what he's doing with that either.
Well, they showed in one of the Soviet prison scenes, there's a video of them subduing Soldier Boy when he kind of got loose with some kind of gas grenade, and these are the same type of that gas grenade. I don't know why Soldier Boy is immune to them now, but like, I think Mother's Milk intended that to incapacitate him.
Gotcha. He wants to fight, but Butcher calls him away to get the twins and stops MM from going after him. Soldier Boy finds the twins and then gets triggered by some Russian music that happens to be playing on the radio again. And he blasts every
Love Sausage.
Soup in the house.
God damn it. If you guys quit playing traditional Russian music, this was not going to happen.
That's the thing. I'm trying to think how many times I have encountered in America traditional Russian music.
Now
I can count them on one finger, maybe.
Stipulate that we've lived in the Midwest.
Fair.
Much of our life. Like, sure. It might very well be different if we lived on the coasts or different parts of
I lived in Manhattan,
the
league, or somewhere in New York City. I'd expect to maybe hear more often. But yeah, here in the Midwest, not often.
Although there was that Micro Express that I'm pretty sure was a front for the Russian Mafia. Yeah, Every time I picked up a chip from that, it was very, very... very plotting Big Trouble for Moose and Squirrel energy in that building. Totally. We could have heard it there for sure.
Perhaps. I've been to a Russian restaurant, so I've probably heard it there, but that's about it. During this, like while this is happening, we are seeing the TNT twins, right? And they're arguing over the man, whichever TNT twin, I don't know their names, having filmed a film, revealing film of somebody that we don't really know. I don't know how he got this thing.
It's a live cam in their toilet is the gag here.
And she's totally. Hooked it
up. Yeah.
I just don't know how you get a camera in a toilet that wouldn't be noticed, A, and B, can hit that angle without, let's say, getting covered.
Shit on?
Yeah, I don't know. That angle seemed weird to me.
Yeah, just saying. I don't know. The right pinhole camera, maybe. But it did seem like it was right from underneath.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you see, like I said earlier, the taint, the gruntle, the fleshy funbridge, all
You'd
of it.
You see the whole thing. I mean,
asshole, balls, all of it.
The whole suspension bridge, it's there.
Yep. So they can show that, but don't you dare show that same dick excited.
If it thing is fully engorged with blood, that's going to threaten people, and you can't have it. You can't have it.
I will say that was maybe the most shocking thing of the entire HeroGasm, is that single shot. Yeah.
I wonder if there's a guy, because I know Amazon could technically do whatever they want. Like, I think that they're all kind of like trying to shy away from outright porn so they don't wind themselves in front of like a Senate committee hearing. But like, was there like, okay, you want to show a butthole? All right. In infrared only. It's got to be a night vision shot. We can't have a true color vision of some dude's butthole.
Low resolution.
It's not going to happen. Kripke? Nope. It's not going to happen. It's got to be low res, CC quality.
I don't care if you use your own butthole. Even if it's a stunt butthole, I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's a stunt b-hole, then yeah. I wonder.
I don't know. To be a fly.
Also, like, do you buy Black Noir turning on Soldier Boy?
Man, I don't have a good feeling on where their relationship was at the time. Like, I don't know what Black Noir's involvement was.
He was about to get hired by Vought onto the Seven, which was then going to be the new premier team that takes over. So I could see Stan Edgar telling this is a quid pro quo. You got to betray Soldier Boy for you to get this spot, and maybe we'll talk about you wearing a mask or whatnot. It seems, if that's the case, like, man, Black Noir played a terrible price for that, because he got fucked up in that whole attack, and it made him even more loyal to Vought.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think we're getting the full story here.
Gotcha.
But it's
like
also
enough information.
It bodes not well for Homelander if his most trusted person on the team has already betrayed the alpha super of a previous team.
Sure. Absolutely. Starlight wants to go back to the carnage at the house, but Huey doesn't want to let her. And so she blasts him and really shows like who the soup in the relationship is, right? Like, Jesus,
put him on his ass. Yeah.
I don't see any powers that could do that to her.
No, she is powerful.
Yeah.
She's just not Homelander, and you know, nobody really is.
And we see the, you know, as part of this carnage, Love Sausage, he's been blackened. His dick is all burned up, man.
The word, like, imagine falling asleep outside naked with no sunscreen on times a million. He's just running around with burnt rope, burnt cordage. It's not good. It looks terrible. The deep running around, no pants, with his octopus friend in like one of those thin plastic bags.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, I thought the HeroGasm itself was kind of disappointing, but the aftermath I thought was appropriately fucked up. Everybody running around with burnt off dicks and
covered in gore.
And Termite getting squashed by Homelander accidentally. Yeah, that's some good fallout. To HeroGasm. Once the ropes were thrown.
God. So some other fallout here is that A-Train is able to grab Blue Hawk and just drags him across the pavement at supersonic speeds until he is a pile of goo. And then his heart gives out and he collapses.
Might be the end. Another inversion, because like dragging someone at high speed down a road has been a popular way to lynch minorities, both sexual and racial. So like, I thought that was a powerful image of this guy doing that to the Blue Hawk.
Absolutely.
And it was fucked up. That's another thing that's like, which is like something. It's like, that's the fucked up thing about America. The creativity you can do killing a fool, infinite. Pleasuring someone, very small. You can just, you need to have all these kind of borders on it. I don't know. It's one of the weird things about our country that I don't understand.
Then Homelander shows up to Herogasm, but, you know, he's not participating. I wonder if Homelander has ever gone to Herogasm. He doesn't seem like the type. He likes to keep his deviancy under the lid.
I think he's like super sexually deviant, like from what we've seen.
I totally agree. I just don't think he does it publicly. I think he wouldn't want anybody to know that.
He's above himself, above all that. Because they did, even they mentioned like they were surprised that Deep showed up. Like maybe this is more. And didn't Butcher say something about this being more like D-lister heroes?
Could be. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Yeah, so Homelander shows up at Herogasm. He sidelines Butcher very quickly and then confronts Soldier Boy, and they start fighting. But then Butcher wakes up and surprises Homelander with his powers, and Soldier Boy, Butcher, and then Huey, who shows up, all tag team Homelander and almost manage to power him down, but he throws them off and flies away.
Yeah.
Carl fucking Urban. Carl Bloody Urban. Jeez, dude. Did you see the looks on his face as he's lasering and going at Homelander here? I've never seen a human
full Homelander punch, and like the grin he gives, like with his teeth all covered in blood, like it's demonic.
Absolutely, 100%. He's insane. I think Carl Urban is insane. You have to be a madman to give that look.
It's so good. And I got, if you Anthony Starr's no slouch either. And this makes me very nostalgic for the glory days of Banshee. Because if you like Anthony Starr, I've said this once, I'll say it a million times, and seeing him in really good fight scenes, check out this old Cinemax show, Banshee. It didn't end on top. It was like that last season was a little flabby and not as good as the others. But those first couple seasons are fucking a tight, really compelling action show, and Anthony Starr just beats the fuck out of so many people and gets the fuck beat on him. It's incredible. This was like made me nostalgic for those days.
Nice. We find out a little bit, you know, I think we kind of picked this up, but Soldier Boy doesn't remember blasting everyone. He specifically says that here.
Yeah. And also, like, maybe I got the idea that he couldn't blast Homelander. Like he was his charge. That like is a charge that has to build up at to some point.
Yeah. I felt like he was trying to charge up, but I thought also that he was struggling with it.
Maybe he didn't have the psychological impetus, but also maybe it's just like a battery where you just, it's a capacitor. It has to store up so much before it can pop.
It could be. He blasted Crimson Cockatiel or whatever her name is pretty well.
Crimson Countess, yeah.
We'll see.
I thought it was so lame with Butcher and Homelander did the Harry Potter thing with the vision. Like, oh my god! I guess they have to. It's almost required if you got opposing people with some sort of beam powers to like oppose them.
Sure,
but holy hell, that's tropey as shit.
Mm-hmm.
I did like seeing Homelander get yanked down by his cape.
Oh, right.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah, this fight is great.
I thought they might kill Homelander, like, because it's like felt like this. It kind of feels like this is the last season, unless they figure out some way to reset him or come up with new bounds, which they're perfectly capable of doing. But I wasn't beyond the realm of possibility that it'd kill him off and then have like two more episodes of I don't know, mopping up Vought.
Yeah, I really do think with all the thematic stuff we have going on here that the most dramatic way to go with this is to power Homelander down, at least temporarily, and then decide what to do with him. And, you know, Kimiko can kind of be our barometer for that too, right? Like if her powers come back at any point, we know that it will be temporary for Homelander. If they don't, then we might be able to neutralize him without killing him. Does he deserve death?
Depowered next episode, and like each episode he gets a little bit back. That could be interesting.
Sure. Like when, and they're arguing over like, do we need to kill him now? Yes. No.
Yeah.
I don't know. That to me is the most dramatically and compelling thing.
We missed another quiet moment of like, this is Starlight and Mother taking their stand, where Mother's Milk wakes up. First thing you can think of is grabbing a pistol. And Starlight's like, look, I need you. People are getting hurt. I got like real, like, you know, in Indiana Jones where he's reaching for the grail and he could almost get it. And mm-hmm. he's so close to getting the thing that him and his father's wanted for so long. And his dad's like, Indiana, it's enough.
Yeah.
And he chooses his dad over. That felt like this kind of energy, because it's like Mother's dad was obsessed with this. He's been obsessed with this. He has. I mean, I don't know what he's going to do with that gun, but like Homelander is as down as he's ever been, and Soldier Boy's right there vulnerable, mm-hmm. and he gives up. I feel like this is a definitive thing that he gives up his quest for vengeance to help Starlight save people's lives. I thought and ends up
sure.
They're like the two unit dynamic duo at the end of this. I thought that was good, and it's been a long time coming. It's been building up.
Right, right.
This whole season.
Still plenty of heroes, you know, plenty of boys out there that we can like claw back from the brink, right? We don't need it to be everybody.
Sure. A couple questions before we move on. Do you think Soldier Boy can beat Homelander in a straight up fight?
It certainly didn't seem like it. I think he was getting his ass kicked. Without powering down Homelander, I don't think so.
It seems like the flight is just a big thing.
Yeah.
Like if you know, that's just a tough thing to overcome, and the power vision. Like if it was just physical strength and speed, because Soldier Boy's also pretty fast. They showed off in this episode. I think he's got him, but like, yeah. I wonder what that does to Soldier Boy no longer being the alpha mm-hmm. superhero on the planet.
I don't know. See, I do think of the bunch, Butcher has the best shot at beating him.
Boy, Butcher, because he's like, it seems like on power they're about even, and yeah. Butcher is combat tested. Like he doesn't know how to, mm-hmm. And he's just so fucking pissed. Like I feel like that's like all other things being equal, the person with yeah. the more juice in the tank, and like he's got an infinite amount.
Right. I mean, how many movies have been made about somebody, you know, not being as well equipped, but wanting it more, right?
Wanting it more. Yeah.
He wants it
and
more.
Like, I don't know that Homelander wants to live as bad as Butcher wants to see him die.
Right.
And the chips are down, I guess. One other test in your barometer, mm-hmm. A-Train, alive or dead?
I think it does no good to kill him here. It's not enough of a statement for me. To kill him here. So I think he's still alive.
Yeah, it's pretty lame to say narratively it doesn't fit him to die here, but I feel that's
how shows work,
that's
right?
That's where I come down on. Yeah, it's like, yeah. Well, yeah.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations, while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Next up, Frenchie tends to Kimiko's wounds, and Kimiko confesses that it wasn't the V that made her a monster, it's just who she is. And then they both try and tell each other, look, we're not broken. Kimiko's trying to comfort him, he's doing the same. They're trying to be a team.
It's a sad commentary on humans, or maybe it's not. Maybe it's sweet that, like, so often we will readily forgive in others things that we could never forgive in ourselves.
Sure.
You know? And, like, there's also, like, the other side of it, like the megalomaniacal people like Homelander that, like, can't ever take any blame and can give maximum deference to themselves and don't. But, like, I feel like it's way more common to see stuff like this where, like, Frenchie and Kimiko are both trying to say, like, well, if you're a monster, then I'm a monster. And if I'm a monster, you're not. But, like, they can only see that grace in each other. They can't see it in themselves.
And honestly,
we know, like, it's a thing.
If I had to say The Boys is about one thing, it would be about that, right? Like, the idea that the idea of people changing, people becoming better than they have been, regardless of what made them so bad in the first place.
And we know, like, that's the thing is, like, I think there's also an element of, like, well, if you only really knew how bad things, like, because the things, like, Frenchie, they revealed in last episode, has killed children for Nina. That's pretty unforgivable. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm sure the stuff that the Golden Hand, I can't remember the organization that, like, fucked up Kimiko. I'm sure they had her do bad shit, too. The thing is, like, there's types of people, like, the thing about Kimiko and Frenchie is they're both survivors.
Sure.
And, like, sets them apart from Homelander is because you could say the Homelander's a survivor, too, except for he didn't. He fell to the darkness. And these guys are still trying to be good people. They are, instead of trying to weed out their last vestiges of humanity, they're trying to desperately cling to it.
Yeah.
That's why I think they're ultimately redeemable in a way that Homelander's doesn't seem so far is not. But it's sad to see them both, like, trying to fall over each other to excuse each other's actions and not willing to see themselves through any other frame but that of a monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some touching scenes with them. And finally, Homelander stares in the mirror and the authorities clean up Herogasm. Then Starlight...
Before we move on, I think it's interesting that they didn't give us any of that internal monologue because, oh my God, like, you know, you thought he was insecure...
Right.
And reactionary before when he was the most powerful man on the planet. Now that status is in jeopardy. Oh boy.
Yeah. So yeah, the authorities clean up Herogasm. Starlight uses the tragedy that happened at Herogasm and her influencer status to try to destroy Homelander's image by live streaming her resignation message to Vought.
Bold strategy, Cotton. We'll see if it pays off. Like,
I mean, she's inviting a fight, right? So
she's got potentially 190 million people on her side.
Yeah, she has a shitload of followers.
Man, do you watch the text? Because like they really capture the vapidness and inanity of, because like we do online streaming stuff,
sure.
But we have we don't have 190 million people in chat. We have like I don't know, between 40 and 100 when we're really rolling.
Right,
you can keep up with it. I always wonder, like, what is the people who are just chatting into the, they're just screaming into the void.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like, they know that by the time they hit enter, seven pages have gone by. Yeah,
it's going to just fly by at light speed. Mm-hmm. Like, what is it for? Are they chatting for each other? Are they chatting for themselves? Is it like, I don't know. I've often wondered that. Like, you know, it's like trying to, like, if everyone's in a stadium trying to scream something at the same time, there's 60,000 people there. It's like, it's at one point, do you just give up because your voice is hoarse? But
right,
they do capture that. Just clueless, lowest common denominator conversation that's happening.
Oh yeah, were you reading some of the messages as they flew
by? Or?
Okay.
Yeah, it was just. I think they do a really good job of capturing that voice, the nice voice of the internet screaming incoherently.
Sure.
She lays a lot of stuff out there that, you know, Soldier Boy's bad, Homelander's worse, he's done something to Maeve, and this is a James Holden move right out of the Expanse playbook.
Totally.
Just fucking extreme leveling, put yourself out there at risk and let the public decide what to do with it, because I don't know, like, I think you said this at the beginning of the episode, there's going to be people that are A-okay with Homelander behaving this way,
yeah,
and are going to call her a dumb whore for, sure, trying to buck the program.
But at the same time, she does put Homelander in a tough position, right? Because there will be people who believe her and are on her side, and there'll probably be far more of them, even if they may not be as vocal, than people who are on Homelander's side. So he can't just go straight at her. This is the thing, right? Like, Homelander has to get smarter. He can't go straight at the trio of Soldier Boy, Huey, and Butcher. He can't go straight at Starlight here, or Annie.
Right.
How is he going to get to them? How is he going to keep the public on his side? Or, I don't know, maybe fuck it, he doesn't care, right? Like, we've talked about that.
I was thinking the same thing, yeah.
Could give up that dream. But it seems like it's a part of who he is. He wants people to love him. How does he get over that?
I don't know. Are you surprised that she didn't go after Victoria Newman a little bit? Like, cause like, if you just throw shit everywhere and if and see what sticks in the who, because that's the one person she didn't like back the fuck off on, you know.
Right.
She backed up Vought. She backed up Homelander. She backed up Soldier Boy. But, you know, Victoria Newman, there's no shade cast. Because, like, there's a lot of people. One of the things in chat was like, I thought that the Office of Superhero Oversight was supposed to save us from this. So, like, a little bit of, like, maybe by implication, like, people are going to, the shine's going to wear off of that star a little bit. Because, like, well, if this... You know, we talked about in the preview, this idea of captured opposition. You know, people wake up to the fact that, like, you've got a whole branch that's supposed to be overseeing this stuff, and they've just been asleep at the switch, or complicit, or an evil soup themselves.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. We also didn't talk about Newman. She brushed off Starlight's accusation of being murdered. I was like, well, all those guys deserved it. Do you know how many of those guys deepfaked me, sucking this or that person's love sausage? And they're all disgusting people, just like the superheroes of Vought. But, like, were they all? There's a lot of heads got popped in that room.
Right.
I don't know.
Do you think it has to do with the conversation that they had and her being at least somewhat on the side of women here? You know, I don't buy everything she says, but does maybe Starlight lend a little bit of, you know, charity to her for that?
Yeah. Yeah, and I could also buy, because like she, the people, the heads I've seen her pop, I feel like I'm roughly on board with, like, you know, if you're the head of the CIA, you probably did shit that's worthy of getting your head popped. You know, you've got enough stature in the federal government. You've probably got some, you know, the, but like, it's the guy that heads up the Scientology thing. Yeah, pop his head. But
right.
I don't
there
know.
Was the, her
She's also working
friend.
For Vought. That's the problem, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah. That was self-defense?
Kind of. I mean, he's probably going to blow her cover, right? I mean, it's just
I guess it's like defense of her public image, which isn't the same thing.
Right, right.
Preserving her cover.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm look, this show, it has many things, and one of them is like, when do the means justify the ends?
Right.
Or other way around, rather. And Newman is kind of the biggest question mark there, right? Like, we don't know everything about her. We know that she has motivations that might be good. We know she uses methods that might be bad, at least in the short term. It's, I don't know. She's a big question mark. She's maybe the biggest question mark at this point.
I agree. Although I gotta say, I think she'd be a dashing head of the boys if she could get like free of Stan Edgar's influence. And because, like,
sure.
One thing I was thinking throughout this episode is Stan Edgar supremely confident dealing with Homelander because he knows he could just have Vicky pop his head?
Because
it does feel like she's like, especially when she fucked with Starlight, who's on, again, not at his level, but in that neighborhood. Maybe a lot of his confidence comes from that. And I feel like if they could just get out the middleman and have a core of like Starlight, Vicky, and Kimiko, you know, balancing out the boys. And if, like, because I had this thing is like, if Homelander dies, I feel like Butcher probably goes with him.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. But I don't know what a show, because like, I started thinking like, what does a show look like without Homelander, without Butcher?
Mm-hmm.
And like, as much as they're like monsters, they are also a big part of what the show is too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. People love watching monsters.
I don't know. Once you kill Homelander, I don't know where you go.
Mm-hmm. We'll see.
We will see. We will see. We are, I mentioned on our other podcast, For All Mankind. Hi, Bob. We are recording these in advance because Jim and I are going to take a vacation the last week of June. So we got a little bit ahead, which means we're way ahead of your guys' feedback, which probably means we're going to have mega supersized Homelander editions of feedback when we get back. If you want to add it to that mighty, mighty load, you want to throw... throw some ropes our way. All you got to do is send in a missive to DHS, which stands for, of course, Department of Homeland Security, DHS@baldmove.com. And we'll either have a supersized mailbag at the end of an episode, or we'll probably come through with a midweek and just kind of like settle all of our feedback business. DHS@baldmove.com. Otherwise, we'll see you next week for the penultimate episode of The Boys. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.